Welcome to Power Play for Friday, October 6th. I'm Mercedes Stevenson. The Trump administration doubling down on Bombardier, slapping more tariffs on the Canadian aerospace giant, quadrupling the price of the C-Series jets. Is it another shot fired in what could be the start of a trade war? Well, today's news on that raising questions for NAFTA negotiations as the Prime Minister gears up to sell Canada in a fourth round of talks. What will the Bombardier-Boeing standoff mean in the big picture, and if all that pressure slash picture and stress on trade is making you think about taking a relaxing Uber Canadian canoe ride, don't do it with a beer in your hand. We'll talk about new laws that could see your driver's license seized for drinking and paddling. And major victories for survivors of residential schools. A unanimous decision by the Supreme Court of Canada puts victims' rights first. We'll have Phil Fontaine on the show to discuss the ruling. But first, the government announces a historic first step in reconciliation with Indigenous survivors of the infamous 60s scoop.
A door has opened. Now we will work together on the path forward, including the words for an apology, the mandate and governance of the foundation. The government has committed to seeing all of the calls to action put forward by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. This agreement is a concrete demonstration of that commitment.
I have great hope that because we've reached this plateau, that this again will never, ever happen in Canada again.
CTV's Kevin Gallagher was at the announcement today and joins us in studio now. Kevin, break down for us the main parts of this settlement. How much money are survivors going to see, and what are the additional funds for?
Well, essentially, Mercedes, their survivors are now going to get a settlement from the government. The total settlement is $750 million. Now, that's broken down over about 18 different class action lawsuits, so the total number of claimants is still sort of yet to be determined. That's something that'll get sorted out. Now, all of the claimants that do come forward will get at least $25,000 and up to about $50,000, of course. That depends how many come through. Now, the big thing that a lot of the survivors that were there today seem very hopeful of is that there's also $50 million going towards a foundation that's designed to help reinvigorate and promote Indigenous culture and Indigenous languages. Of course, that's sort of the big thing that many survivors said to me today, that this isn't so much for them about the money, but that at a young time in their lives, often most of them were taken from their families at 6 months to 2 years, you know, they never had an opportunity to learn their mother tongue, their Indigenous language, and learn about their culture. So that's something that they were very excited about within this settlement.
And when you spoke to some of these survivors who were there today, what's their feeling on the settlement? Is it a feeling that the government is trying to take a step forward, or is it a bit of a feeling that maybe the government's hand was forced on this?
I think a first step. I kept hearing that over and over. It's a first step. So certainly there's a lot of work that I think they want to be done. As I can tell you, as we're talking about the settlement money, it's still not entirely clear about who's going to get that money, how many people are going to come forward, what's the process in which they're going to be able to claim that money. So, and again, what's this foundation going to look like? It's going to supposedly have, according to Carolyn Bennett today, a lot of input from the Indigenous survivors who were involved in the 60s scoop. How much? What will it look like? How will then programs access that money? So certainly there's a lot to be worked out. This is still an agreement in faith. It needs to be approved by a judge in May. So there's still more steps to go. So a first step, and also a step that had to come after there was already a decision lost in an Ontario Superior Court.
Right, because this was actually a court decision that triggered it. It wasn't just the government deciding to be generous.
This is something that's important to point out, I think, is that it is a settlement that's reached today, and a settlement that's reached in good faith, but it comes after the federal government fought these survivors in court and lost.
Wow, and I think that's part of that reconciliation you're talking about that they're looking for in the long term. I know there was some discussion about education today, and certainly what you were mentioning, this foundation, this organization that will serve to do that, that's one of the most important factors, it seems like, for a lot of survivors to make sure the next generation knows about things like the 60 scoop, which I know I grew up with no idea had happened. So certainly to make sure that there's not another generation growing up with that kind of ignorance.
Yeah, again, never again is another thing that I kept hearing from a lot of people on the Hill today who are there, and they're coming from all over the world. I think we sort of forget that that many of these were these 60s scoop children were sent to Canadian families, but some were sent to Scotland, New Zealand, wow. United States. There was a gentleman I talked to today who'd grown up in California and, you know, had learned later in life, like, oh, I was born in northern Manitoba. You know, and it's a whole different, you know, reality check, a crisis in who you are, an identity mm-hmm. crisis in a sense. So certainly, yes, this is a chapter in Canadian history that not a lot of Canadians know about. And I think a lot of Canadians are learning more about the residential school system. And it's very much related. A lot of these children, their parents were products of the residential school system, often traumatized psychologically and then deemed by the government to be unfit parents. And thus, they were taken from those parents and given to often non-Indigenous families, but usually white families, right? So this is a big part of the picture, and you bring up the reconciliation part of this. And so definitely it's sort of, again, I heard this again and again, it's a first step as far as they're concerned, and there's many more that they'd like to see happen.
Okay, CTV's Kevin Gallagher, thank you so much for joining us with that report.
You're welcome.
Well, another major victory for survivors of residential schools today, as the Supreme Court of Canada ruled unanimously that those who shared their stories have a right to keep those records private and have them destroyed. We have Phil Fontaine joining us now, who, of course, was at the forefront of this case and one of the most recognizable Indigenous leaders in Canada. Mr. Fontaine, tell me what you felt today when you learned the court had ruled in your favor your right to keep those documents private.
It was a good decision. It was a very clear statement on the rights of survivors, their consent. It is about their dignity. It is about their respect. And it was a good decision. But we're not gloating by any stretch. We're just very thankful that the Supreme Court of Canada came down on the right side in this case.
Sir, I think I was wondering, people at home are wondering, why would the government have fought you on this? Why would they argue that your personal testimony of something that is so painful and so private should be made public?
Well, we struggled with the government's position because they were party to the negotiations that brought forward the settlement agreement, the historic settlement agreement, the largest in Canadian history, one of the largest of its kind in the world. And every party to the process that resulted in the settlement agreement agreed that the IAP process was going to be a private and confidential process. And every survivor, and we're talking here about 38,000 that went through this process, was received a very clear and unequivocal statement that their testimony was confidential. And every person that participated, including independent adjudicators, affixed their signatures to a document that confirmed the confidentiality of all of these statements.
Mr. Fontaine, you, of course, are a survivor of the residential school system. Today you saw fellow survivors here on Parliament Hill, that they are receiving, the survivors of the 60s scoop, compensation from the federal government. I'd like to have your thoughts on the government's offer. Do you think that it's a good first step?
It is an important step. Many of these people suffered unnecessarily, and this is one step in reclaiming their stories, and it's about ensuring their place in the Indigenous community, and it's as I see it as an important first step, just like our process when we concluded the negotiations that resulted in the historic settlement agreement. We knew and understood that this was the first step in what was going to be a long process to bring about healing and reconciliation. We knew that it wasn't going to be instantaneous. We knew that it was going to be a difficult journey.
Mr. Fontaine, looking at the government's record so far and the announcement today, the Supreme Court decision, there's all this discussion of reconciliation. What do you think are some of the most important things that really need to be done to begin moving further down that path?
Well, I believe if this government and any other government that follows them, if they are true to their word about reconciliation, they should stop fighting us in the courts, because it's a difficult process and always uncertain. It's costly, and there's in many of these very difficult issues, it's completely unnecessary to have to go to the courts to seek a remedy, when what is needed is political will, because these are political issues essentially, and we shouldn't be forced to go to the courts to seek resolution. It's completely unfair.
Mr. Fontaine, thank you so much for your time today and for sharing those words with us.
Thank you.
Well, what are your thoughts on the government's settlement for the 60s scoop survivors and today's Supreme Court ruling? We'd love to know your thoughts, so please reach out to us through social media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also contact us via email. Our address is powerplay@ctvnews.ca. Coming up, another blow for Bombardier and Canada-US relations. Welcome back. The U.S. Department of Commerce hit Canadian aerospace giant Bombardier with an additional 80% tariff today. That's on top of the 220% in countervailing duties already slapped on the company, meaning the cost of those C-Series jets that Delta wants to buy will quadruple, with Delta having to pay $3 U.S. for every dollar they pay to the actual company itself, and then $3 to the U.S. government. So obviously a pretty substantial maneuver today. Take a look at this.
Well, it was expected, because we knew that through the process, we had to go through a preliminary decision regarding countervailing duties, which happened last week, and now anti-dumping duties. Of course, we're in complete disagreement with the decision. If anybody was doubting that Boeing was using American law to its advantage, I think we have the evidence of this today. Now, it's still a preliminary decision. Now we have to go through the bottom of the case, and Boeing has to prove and demonstrate to the American panel that they got a prejudice and damages coming out of the sale that Bombardier, the C-Series sells to Delta. And I have to remind everybody that Boeing do not produce an aircraft in the same segment that the C-Series. We are not in competition with them. It's a segment that they quit 10 years ago, and they did not offer a product to Delta. So it's difficult to demonstrate that you got a prejudice or damages out of a situation where you did not compete.
And in a statement, Foreign Affairs Minister Chrystia Freeland said, "We are extremely disappointed by an incomplete disagreement with the U.S. Department of Commerce's preliminary determination in the anti-dumping investigation of exports of large aircraft from Canada. Boeing is manipulating the U.S. trade remedy system to prevent Bombardier's new aircraft, the C-Series, from entering the U.S. market, despite Boeing's admission that it does not compete with the C-Series." Joining me now to talk about this story more is expert trade lawyer Lawrence Herman. I want to start by asking you, not really a surprise today that we saw the U.S. double down, but what's the consequence here for Canada?
Well, the consequence for Canada and for Bombardier is pretty serious. I think the results of this case will make it very, very difficult for Bombardier to compete in the U.S. market. There's a long way to go. We know that. These are preliminary determinations, but the die is pretty much cast in terms of the level of subsidy amounts and dumping amounts that the Department of Commerce has calculated. So all efforts will be, as I think the statement from Bombardier indicated, on challenging Boeing's case before the International Trade Commission. A long way to go. This will be a hard-fought battle. And the cards, to some extent, are stacked against Bombardier. So the risks for that company right now are serious. They can't be understated.
Well, I'm curious, when you say that the risks to Bombardier are substantial there in the appeal process, can you elaborate a bit on why that is?
Well, you know, once these preliminary duties are set, the case goes to the International Trade Commission. The commission will hear evidence from Boeing, countered from Bombardier, whereby Boeing is going to say that these aircraft, if they're sold in the United States, will harm us, cause material injury to our production of like products. Now, it's true that Boeing doesn't currently have an aircraft in this same category. They're going to have to show, and it's not going to be a slam dunk by any means, that they have plans afoot whereby they can produce and are actively implementing those plans to produce a comparable aircraft. There'll be a lot of that sort of evidence that'll have to be presented and substantiated before the International Trade Commission. In the meantime, we can't understate the fact that the results of the current determinations are pretty serious.
Mr. Herman, where do they get these numbers? When, you know, the U.S. Commerce Department is sitting down, you hear 220%. Most people would assume something max out at 100%. And here we're looking in total at 300% in tariffs. How is that calculated, and why is it so high?
Look, there's no doubt that the Commerce Department will use whatever methods they can to jack up the amount of duties applied. Don't forget, the Department of Commerce is an agency of the U.S. government. It's part of the Commerce Department, the department that deals with U.S. trade. And so I don't think you'd get any breaks from the Commerce Department. They've used an egregious method of setting these duties. But look, even if the duties were 50% or 25%, it would still be a hurdle that Bombardier would have difficulty overcoming. But leaving that aside, we're going into some very troubled waters, and the implications for the Canadian aerospace sector are quite serious. And it's made even more serious by the fact that the current U.S. administration, from Mr. Trump and the White House on down, isn't anxious to do agreements with their trading partners. So settling this case will be very, very difficult, if not impossible.
Certainly very troubling as NAFTA renegotiations are underway. Mr. Herman, thank you very much for your time today.
You're welcome.
So will this latest blow to Bombardier affect the free trade talks that are underway as the fourth round of NAFTA negotiations begin next week in Washington, D.C., where CTV's Richard Madden joins us from now. You know, Richard, these numbers coming from the U.S. Commerce Department, but is this a bureaucratic thing, or is this really the Trump administration sending a message to Canada?
I would suggest that it's the Trump administration that is really wrapping themselves behind Trump's America First message. We saw this with the Commerce Department taking on trade deficits, giving a number suggesting Canada was running a trade deficit. That's not accurate if you look at Canada's numbers to the United States, where trade is essentially balanced. What we see with the Bombardier decision not only makes it very difficult for Canadian aerospace companies to compete, it gives Boeing pretty much a wide open field at this point anyway, and it really ratchets it up the tensions ahead of this critical fourth round of NAFTA talks that gets underway here in the Capitol on Wednesday, certainly putting more fuel to the tension as these three countries sit down at the table again.
Yeah, Richard, you've been following them very closely. You were in Mexico City as well watching this. Do you think it has a serious impact on what's going to be happening at the negotiating table?
I think it adds more negative tone to the discussions, frankly, behind the scenes. You know, speaking to negotiators in Mexico City in the previous round before Ottawa, there was a sense that the United States was really playing hardball with these negotiations, refusing to